I wanted to talk about the people who are the people who have the only way. You know those guys? One of the problems I've discovered about them, particularly in the 9 years that I've been working with Don and Jamal, and we've been had the privilege of going around the country and meeting a real lot of people, is that the people who think they have the only way, and we have a tendency to call them fundamentalists, the people who think they have the only way is us. All of us think we have the only way. You know, we have our sets of principles. We could say we welcome everybody in our way, which is the right way. And we notice people who have the right way mostly when they have a different right way than our way. In the old days, I, in trying to discover a place for myself as a rabbi, I served congregations, and then I went out onto college campuses and was a Hillel rabbi, like a campus rabbi at USC and then at Cal State Northridge. And in those days, there were people who went around campus trying to convert people to Christianity. And the people they particularly liked to convert were Jews. It appeared as though they got extra points for every... And these people would come up to students on campus, look them deeply in the eye, and say, "God told me to talk to you." So I would counsel those students to respond to that opening by saying, when somebody said to you, "God told me to talk to you," to look them square in the eye and say, "God told me not to talk to you." It worked, actually. You know, if you give people back the very same thing they give you, it's like talking to somebody and saying, "Is there anything I can say to you that will change your mind about how you believe what you believe?" And they'll say, "No." You mean there is absolutely nothing I can say that would get you to change your mind? They'll say, "No." And I say, "Okay, now imagine that it's the same for me. Now let's talk." Along the way, I served a congregation as students, rabbinical students. We go out to congregations that are either too small to have their own rabbi or couldn't find a rabbi who would go there. In my case, I went to a place called Hattiesburg, Mississippi, in the middle of the voter registration dramas. This was the middle of 1965. And their rabbi had fled. Nobody would go there. Nobody would go there because they were such bad people. You know, which is always a problem. It's really easy for us to see the bad people out there, but as long as we don't sit down and talk to them and see what their reality is and what their story is, because we're all the same people. So I, being an Ohio boy, I felt I should see what it's like to be in the South. And it was an education in many ways, and it was a tremendous blessing for me. But it was Southern Baptist country. So once every year, the Southern Baptist Seminary would bring their students to the Shabbat, the Friday night service at the synagogue. And after the service, they would ask the rabbi questions. And so one young man raised his hand and said to me, "What do you do with Isaiah chapter 60, verse 22? I actually had no idea what the verse was, but I suspected it had something to do with a verse used to prove the genealogy, you know, that a young woman would give birth, you know, proving the Jesus story. So I said to him, I read it in the context of chapter 60, verses 12 to 17. It was a little bit of a risk because I didn't know what those verses were either, but I have the idea that people who quote verses like that just know that verse. And I had just had that suspicion, and sure enough, the whole place was totally impressed. Oh. So one of the places that I've kind of felt left out is with talk about being reborn. You know, people who talk about being reborn are excited about that rebirth. It is a major experience in their lives. So I went and looked and said, okay, what is this reborn stuff about? And I found John 3, verse 3. Now, it's not the one you do at baseball games. That's a different verse. You've seen those signs. Except a man be born again, Jesus is talking to Nicodemus. Except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. And I thought, that's true. That's true. Because being born again can only mean letting go of the stuck place we happen to be at. Being born again can only mean letting go of the narrowness of our identity that we have kind of fallen into, the automatic nature of our existence. Because we run on automatic most of the time. A lot of the automatics that we develop are in the service of proficiency. You know, like driving a stick shift car, do you remember? Learning that, and then all of a sudden you didn't have to think about it. Learning to touch type, to the point where when you start thinking about it, you can't touch type anymore. You know, it goes on automatic. We are on automatic with each other all the time. We're on automatic with our world all the time. You know how it is when you meet somebody and they are different and you can't quite remember their name, and sometimes you don't remember their face for a while. Might be somebody in the neighborhood, might be somebody at church, might be somebody at work. And then all of a sudden it gets to a place where you know them and you see their face and you know their name. You know that experience. We all have that experience. Well, at the point we know them, we are no longer seeing them. At the point we know them, we have built up the image in our consciousness, and what we're seeing instead is our image of them. And that's why when we see somebody every day, they don't change. But when we don't see somebody over a long period of time, they have changed enough, so it's kind of jarring. It doesn't any more fit our image, and we've got to reconstruct the image. Most of the time in our lives, we are incredibly limited and incredibly asleep. And it's really hard to know we're asleep until we remember that the symptom of being not asleep, the symptom of being fully present, is that it's always now, and the now is always new. For example, if you sit with a person who is a close friend or your partner, somebody you're with a lot, and sit and look at each other silently. Just really look at each other, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. You'll start to see the image you have in your head of them peel away. And you'll start to see the face, the person, however they are in that moment, appear. And it's probably like that for everyone in our environment. You know, that were we to take the time to allow ourselves to be present, to allow ourselves to meet the world that we've been holding together. Because the truth of the matter is that we are all reborn. All of us. You know this. You know, for example, that we serve as vehicles for a life that does not end with every death, nor does it begin with every birth. We hold that within ourselves. We are representatives, vehicles, caretakers. And when we do our job appropriately, we channel the wisdom and the wholeness and the love and the compassion of that soul, of that greater being, into the world we share. And when we forget our job, we get so caught up in this marvelous ego we have created and in the drama that we are engaged in that we lose sight of that. And we all do it. So the real question is, how do you get reborn without dying? You know, because, yes, we get reborn when we die, but that's kind of a long time. How do we get reborn in the midst of it? And, of course, the idea of I can be reborn once and then I'll have the construct that I can keep forever. No. No, it's ultimately trading one shell, trading one automaticness for another. And it'll work for a little while. And then to get it to really work, we've got to convince others to come along. And in their coming along, we are affirmed and confirmed. So what's required to be reborn right now? You're going to answer? Okay.
Find a teacher, a preacher, rabbi, whatever, who is on your level. Listen to him, learn, and then meditate. Put it into practice.
Okay.
I said on your level because even the beginning people who are Jehovah's Witnesses and all these other things, they are correct for where they are at that time. At that time, from my experience, has been a very important phrase because you develop.
Okay.
You keep developing and changing.
Okay. The sensitive part of that is if I think that you need to awaken, if I think that you're stuck, we're all in trouble. You know, because the evaluator of our stuckness needs to be ourselves. When I think you're stuck, then what I want you to do ultimately is get to the place I am. And the place I am is better. And I tend to be that person going, God told me to talk to you. It's, one can demonstrate it, you know, and then have somebody say, what are you doing? One can go, I'm feeling stuck. What do I need to do? One can feel things have ground to a halt. What do I do? And ultimately, to get unstuck is to let go. It's awful. No, it's really awful because the ego part of us wants predictability. And predictability requires that we know how things are. This is how things are, and we're going to stick to it. And real evolution and real awakening and real rebirth, I mean, that's why sometimes it takes dying to be reborn. I think we're dying to be reborn every minute because there is such absolute excitement in awakening to the moment. But it requires letting go of who we think we are at any given moment. And it requires letting go of thinking that we know what's going on. The ego throws up its arms in fear. And that's why meditation is so crucial. Because in meditative practice, a part of ourselves is activated that is deeper than that conditioned reality, the personality and the ego. There's a part within each of and every one of us that knows that that's just a vehicle for translating. God bless you. But we need to wake up to that which needs to be translated. So, I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath and close your eyes. Behind those closed eyes, you have an awareness of the room that you are in, and you have an awareness of the people that you are with in this room. Oh, it might be clear, it might be hazy, it might be fuzzy. But what if you would know that in these moments of silence, everybody in the room is changing. Everybody in the room is changing because they're being reborn. They're getting unstuck. And because that's true, it's necessary to pay attention. And to discover who's around you. And to know that when we look at each other with eyes of discovering, we are no longer demanding that others conform to old images we carry of them. And when we are looking at ourselves through eyes of discovery, we get to witness the deeper integrity that yearns to awaken within us. The truth is that we are reborn each and every moment. It's just that we haven't been paying attention. The philosopher says you can't step into the same river twice, but it's more accurate to say you can't step into the same river once. Everything is alive. Everything is evolving. There are possibilities not yet imagined. And our task is to awaken to that level of compassion and love that allows each and every reality we meet to be blessed. So whenever you're ready, knowing that things are no longer as they once appeared, knowing that those around you are more, and knowing that you, the center of your experience, the center of your thought, are more. In each and every moment, more. Take a deep breath. Let the eyes open. And say, "Hi." Thank you.